Well, hello there, and welcome to the first Nat Decants podcast. I'm your wine-soaked host, Natalie McLean, and this is definitely not Masterpiece Theater. In each podcast, I'm going to read an article from my latest e-newsletter, but not my wine picks. I think that would be as exciting as reading from the phone directory. But you can still find my picks in my free e-newsletter at nataliemclean.com. I'm not in a recording studio, by the way. In fact, I am sitting here at my paper-strewn desk in with an extremely dorky microphone, so this will be a warts-and-all recording. I am not doing this 10 times over. I'd love to hear your thoughts on these podcasts and how I can make them better for you, within reason. I'm a techno-weenie, or whiny, whatever, and so I could use your help. So email me at natdecants@nataliemclean.com. The two wine words of the week to mention first before we get into the story. The first one is buttery. A wine with the taste or aroma of butter resulting from the wine's time in contact with yeast, as well as the flavors imparted from oak barrel fermentation and or aging. New World Chardonnays from California, Chile, and Australia in particular, are often described as having buttery aromas and flavors. Yum. The second word is legs. And no, I'm not referring to the gams of an attractive young winemaker, but that is a nice image. These are the rivulets of wine that slowly glide down the glass after swirling it, and sometimes they're called tears of joy. They're related to surface tension differences between water and alcohol. So the more alcoholic the wine, the slower the legs go down the glass and the more defined they are. This doesn't indicate a better wine, just a more alcoholic one. But for some of us, that is a better wine. And now, sit back, pour yourself a glass of something strong, and enjoy this week's story entitled Comfort Wines. Finally, I had an assignment that would give full vent to my scientific mind, to define and recommend winter comfort wines that would suit winter comfort activities. The research would be vast. A breakthrough in this field would be bigger than cold fusion. I could envision my glorious future publishing my seminal book on comfort wines with a foreword by Dr. Serge Reynaud, the French scientist whose French paradox studies established some of wine's health benefits. Snapping out of my reverie, I trot down to my laboratory, the wine cellar, to begin investigation. Now, we've all heard about comfort food, but what about comfort wine? After some experimentation in my cellar, I come to the discomforting conclusion. Few wines aren't comfort wines. In fact, there are no uncomfortable wines or wines for discomfort. In fact, I find them all of great comfort. How then to narrow the field? So I turned to previous papers put forward in the comfort wine research community with titles such as The Wines of Winter, What to Drink When the Temperature Drops, and the incisive Warm Tipples for Cold Nibbles. Then I leaf through more magazines and conclude that all winter wines are best consumed while chatting with friends in cable-knit sweaters by crackling fires with Irish setters at your feet. These repeated images can't simply be a coincidence or a collective lack of imagination, can they? I decide to simulate this first winter comfort activity in a controlled environment. Even though my scientific method is a little rusty, I dropped all science courses in grade 12, choosing to take more marketable courses, such as Russian literature and comparative world religion. I spot a couple of neighbors shoveling out the snow and insist that they go home, put on some knitted sweaters, and come on over. We all sit in front of the fireplace, glowing radiantly. The temperature in the house is already 29 degrees Celsius, or I guess, I don't know, is that 80 degrees Fahrenheit? The heat from the fire wafts over us in waves, and while I pour, I explained that we are searching for wines that are familiar to us, since we usually equate comfort with the familiar. I also mentioned that these wines won't be described as intellectual and probably won't have aromas of wet violets, but they're not bland or unchallenging either. They resonate with deep, warm layers of fruit. My neighbors look at me curiously, but appreciate the free drinks. We find a number of wines that fit this description, especially those from Australia, where a warm climate results in concentrated wines with lots of fruit. Among the best, Wyndham Estate Bin 44 Cabernet and Limestone Coast Shiraz. By this time, we've peeled off all our layers down to our t-shirts, but are finding great comfort in the wines. This provides me with my first hypothesis. Warm, jammy wines from Australia can be considered winter comfort wines, whether you're wearing a snuggly sweater or not. And in the absence of an Irish setter, a fluffy cat is an adequate substitute. After my neighbors troop off, I get out a bottle of Valpolicella, the quintessential easy drinking wine. My next hypothesis is to prove that not all winter wines have to be heavily extracted with high alcohol content and fruit flavors, especially when you want to sip them over an entire evening, the winter equivalent of quaffing on the patio. I concentrate on the bottle and whisper my observations into a small dictaphone. Which winter comfort activity would pair well with sipping this wine? I become unsettled with the strangeness of observing myself, so I decide to call the local movie critic, whom I don't know, but he happens to answer his phone. It turns out he likes the movie Il Postino, The Postman. A happy coincidence, since I just happen to be tasting several northern Italian reds. Massey Valpolicella, Ruffino Reserva Ducale, Chianti Classico, and Fontafrida Barbaresco. Bah, they just roll off the tongue. They all complement the film's warmth and intimacy with their rounded flavors of black cherries and plums and a smoky finish. The second hypothesis is correct. Low-alcohol wines are suitable to winter activities. And the bonus is you don't believe yourself a minor character in one of those movies. Now for my third hypothesis. Anyone can pair wine with food, but only those with too much time on their hands can pair wine with literature. Looking at the books on my shelves, though, my eyes glaze over. Again, I decide to call someone I don't know, the local manager of the bookstore, who suggests 100 Years of Solitude. The story, by Gabriel Garcia Marquez, follows several generations of a Latin American family. So naturally, I scour the shelves at my local liquor store for wines that are made in the novel setting, a small northern Colombian village called Macondo. But after several hours of fruitless searching, the merchant is kind enough to tell me that the village was fictional. He gently points me in the direction of Chilean wines. I pick up several Chilean reds, hoping to find aromas that will trigger the novel's subtext, kind of like Marcel Proust's memory-enhancing Madeleine. Cantautoro's Sunrise Cabernet Sauvignon and Eras's Merlot don't help with the textual analysis, but they do have a supple texture and lots of fruit up front. Feeling pretty pleased with myself, in the name of science, I press on to my last hypothesis. Whether Merlot is the only wine mellow enough for jazz music. Music expert Anne Law suggests I listen to All For You, a dedication to Nat King Cole Trio by Diana Krall. Krall's music calls for something lush to complement the singer's sultry voice. So I start with a Mission Hill Merlot, and it works. But would a Cab or a Zin be equally jazzy? Sumac Ridge Cabernet Franc and Klein Zinfandel work just fine, too. I even try a little fizz with my Frim Fram sauce, Roederer Estate from California. I had just opened up new vistas of Venus possibility for jazz lovers everywhere. After a long day in the laboratory, it was time to write up my findings. I discovered that while there are no uncomfortable wines, some work especially well when you want something familiar. But don't take my word for it. Prove it to yourself. That's it for the article. There are two recipes included in this week's story, and both are extremely comforting. A bacon and onion tartlet with chèvre, and a Gruyère de fromage with Cabernet Franc sauce. And that is it for this week. Please let others know about these podcasts and my newsletter at nataliemaclean.com. Tune in again in 2 weeks' time for another exciting episode. In the meantime, drink up. Cheers, Natalie. This podcast and its content are a copyright of Natalie Maclean, 2007.